Jamie mentioned, my name is David Toledo, and I'm a rangeland scientist. So when I was invited to speak here, I was wondering why a rangeland scientist up here in front of all these forage agronomists. But it was very interesting to hear a lot of your questions and how those relate to rangeland science and some of the issues that we deal with in rangeland science. So I'm now starting to understand the genius of putting this together and how it fits so well with the objectives of what you want to do or what we want to do in terms of promoting resilience and resilient management of these systems. So I'm going to be talking about resilience in the Northern Great Plains. And I'm going to be talking a bit about enterprise resilience and also ecological resilience. So one of the biggest challenges in this area is winter hardiness. It gets very cold, and it's very cold for a very long time. So one of the primary focuses for livestock managers in these areas are to minimize winter feed costs and winter storage costs. So therefore, finding ways to extend the length of the growing season and minimizing the amount of forage that you have to store is a very good management alternative. So in doing this, my co-author, Matt Sanderson, who is a forage agronomist, we got together and started thinking about the forages that have been used in this area and have been researched for this area that are winter hardiness and adapted to these systems. We came up with different perennial legumes, grass forages, and annual species that have worked in the past and continue to be used by growers in these areas. So the advantages of these perennial legumes is that they definitely extend the length of a growing season into late fall and early spring. And alfalfa is one of the most commonly used forages that being used right now. There has been some problems with it in terms of winter hardiness, disease, stand longevity. So there's been a lot of research too on establishment of other perennial legumes, such as birdsfoot trefoil, Canadian milk vetch, Sicera milk vetch, crown vetch, and some of the clovers. Also, grass forages have been used a lot in these areas. And the two of the predominant forages used are smooth brome and meadow brome. But some of the issues with smooth brome is that towards a hotter, drier part of the year, it tends to decrease production. And it has an issue with invasiveness in these areas. So in areas where it gets planted, it can actually extend its range and move onto natural rangeland areas and start invading those. So as a recommendation, people have been using more of the meadow brome because it tends to be a little more stable in terms of production throughout the growing season, and it's way less invasive as the smooth brome. There's also other potential forages for these areas, some of those as intermediate wheatgrass, tall wheatgrass, hybrid wheatgrass, and as someone earlier spoke about some of the native species, including the western wheatgrass and green needlegrass. In terms of annual species, there's been a lot of exciting research too in terms of cover crops and how these can be used as forages, and also research on how different forages and different crops and swath crops can be used to provide forage for livestock during tougher times of the year. And one of the things about when you're talking about resilience and enterprise resilience, by having this diversity of crops and forages, if something were to go wrong with one of your areas, one of your crops, you can always have an alternative crop to go to and use that instead. So you're not putting all your eggs in one basket. So in terms of research, there's been a lot of research in terms of cover crops, native range crops, forage pasture, and how these have been used to increase this enterprise resilience in management operations. One of the interesting things that have been done in the Northern Great Plains, and this is a lab where I work out, so this is a little self-promotion here, is the Integrated Crop Livestock Systems Experiment, which started in 1999, and has been kept going by Dr. Dave Archer, Dr. Mark Liebig, Jim Karn, Dr. Don Tanaka in this area. And findings from this research have helped show that using the swath corn and OP mixes has an economic advantage over storing a lot of forage hay. So you can actually graze these, and they provide some economic advantage. Research done by Dr. Mark Liebig has shown that there were concerns over the trampling and its effect on infiltration and compaction, and over 3, 6, and 9 years they didn't notice any differences in infiltration or compaction. So it can be, or it is a good economic alternative in these areas, and it can actually help increase that enterprise resilience. One issue is that if we have too much snow or too much ice, your cattle might not have access to those forage items. Research done in Canada has actually shown that cattle can be pretty tough and can actually dig through 40, 50 centimeters of snow to get to forage. I still have to see that, but that's what the research shows. Before moving here, I've been in the Northern Great Plains for 4 years. Before that, I was in Texas, before New Mexico and Florida. So this ecosystem is fairly new to me, and I have not seen a cow dig through 50 centimeters of snow yet. So speaking of resilience and something that someone brought up earlier, in terms of management and how important management is to conferring some of this resilience, is a research project that has been going on at the Northern Great Plains Research Lab since 1936. And so this is a very long-term data set, and where they've been monitoring cattle weight gains on pastures that were grazed at light, moderate, and heavy stocking rates. And one really interesting thing is in these heavier stocking rate pastures, whenever there was variations in climate, it really affected the weight of those animals those years, and there was a lag effect of those cattle weight gains. While in the lighter growing, graze areas, there was some resilience in terms of cattle weight gains. They were able to maintain some of that weight, and it reduced the vulnerability to climate extremes. So management of those grazed areas can be very important, and it does matter. So in the Northern Great Plains, I think a lot of this is not very new, because a lot of the landowners and the ranchers in this area tend to be pretty progressive in how they manage things. So they are using varieties of forages, they're using native range, they're using pasture, and they have been using crops to kind of supplement some of that feeding and some of their management operations. And if you look at this map, this is a National Land Cover database, and focus on the Northern Great Plains, or the Great Plains, and I'll be focusing kind of on the northern part of it. The darker green areas are areas that are typically managed as pastures, and the lighter green areas are areas typically managed as rangelands. So we see there's a lot of rangeland in this area. And that's probably why I was hired up there. They needed a rangeland scientist. And a lot of these areas are managed as rangeland and pasture. So one of the things that I was thinking about as I was putting together this presentation was we have these multiple management uses, and we have these different forages that I talked about earlier. But then I superimpose this major land resource area map, which talks about land physiology, geology, topography, climate, and how that affects plant potential. So not all plants can grow the same in all these different areas. And then how do you take that into account and take management into account? I went even further. This is a map of those major land resource areas for North Dakota, and I focused on that little blue square and thought, well, maybe if I focus in further, I can kind of figure out exactly what forages I could use for those areas. But then you look at the soil properties and qualities. This is a map from the Webb Soil Survey, and there's a huge variety of soil properties and qualities that are actually going to affect those plants that you plant there, and how they're going to grow and how they're going to react to stresses, environmental stresses, or management stresses. So one way to deal with this is through ecological site descriptions and forage suitability groups. These soils and these areas into areas with similar potential. So ecological site descriptions kind of group land in terms of certain physical characteristics like topography, climate, soils, and in their ability to produce distinct types and amounts of vegetation. Forage suitability groups do a very similar thing, and one of the neat things is that these two are sufficiently uniform to support the same plants under the same management conditions, have comparable potential productivity, and require similar conservation treatments and management to produce optimum forage. So I'm talking about optimum forage and resilience. So how do we do this? Within these ecological site descriptions, there's these things called state and transition models. So these states within the state and transition models talk about the ecological dynamics within a particular piece of land based on the potential of that land to produce vegetation, and the dynamics within that state of that those plants. And let's see if I have a pointer. And so this would be considered a state, and there's some variation within that state. And then there's thresholds. And when you cross one of these thresholds, we're thinking resilience, and we're thinking about losing resilience. There's a change in resilience to a different state that has its own set of resilience, and that can change and get either further degraded. But going back is really hard, and it's very hard to do without some serious management actions. So we have these tools available to us through ecological site descriptions that we can use to kind of manage for resilient systems. If we use these tools further, we see on the left ecological site descriptions. If we go through the document, you'd be able to read that a little better. This is just a copy paste from one of the documents. On the left is an ecological site description for what was considered the native plant community. And you see what plants grow there. You have blue grama, green needle nut grass, western wheatgrass, which I talked about earlier are good forages, native forages that have been used in this area. And it talks about their productivity under low and high precipitation years. Then there's forage suitability groups, and these both this ecological site description and this forage suitability group are for major land resource area 54 and loamy ecological sites or loamy soils. In this forage suitability group, we also see plants that are adapted to this area, forage plants that are adapted to this area, and whether they perform good or fair under these soils. So we have these tools available to us to figure out what we want to use in this particular soils. And as you start thinking about this and the potential of using this, then you start thinking, well, where do I start? How do I figure out what I need to do to pick the best forage for the soils and topography and climate of the area that I'm working on? And you do this by selecting the best plants to match those soils, topography, and area. And you need to know where you're at in terms of your ecological potential and the soils and your management. So you need a tool that you can use to assess, manage, and then monitor to sustainably optimize these areas for your management or your management goals. And those management goals can be livestock, can be wildlife, can be a diversity of management options. So my colleagues and I have developed this tool to do this, and I'm going to go through this tool and how you can use it to manage in a resilient way, manage for resilience. And this tool is based on a strong ecological foundation that is provided through looking at three different attributes, which are soil site stability, hydrologic function, and biotic integrity. And there's a fourth attribute that we've been looking at called livestock carrying capacity. So we use two different methods. We didn't reinvent the wheel, but look at two methods that are out there already. And one of them is used mostly in the eastern part of the U.S. This one's used mostly in the western part of the U.S. And that map I showed earlier, that's mostly rangelands. And it's the interpreting indicators of rangeland health. And what this method does is evaluate three attributes, the soil site stability, hydrologic function, and biotic integrity, using 17 indicators. And the indicators are listed there, so rills, water flow patterns, pedestals and terracettes, bare ground, gullies, wind-scoured blowouts under depositional areas, litter movement, soil surface resistance to erosion, soil surface loss or degradation, plant community composition and distribution relative to infiltration and runoff, compaction layer, functional structural groups, relates a lot to plants and what is on there, and diversity. Plant mortality and decadence, litter amount, annual production, invasive plants, and reproductive capability of perennial plants. And all of these are based on the potential of that particular land that you're evaluating. So for each ecological site, for each piece of land, each one of those polygons that I showed earlier, there's actually an ecological site description that has what the reference for each of these 17 indicators should be. So that's work that has already been done, and all you have to go out and do is look at these indicators based on that reference and compare it to what you have on the ground. So it might sound complicated, but it's actually, once you learn how to do it, it's a pretty fast process, and it can tell you a lot about the land that you're actually evaluating or assessing. And additionally, in terms of the livestock carrying capacity attributes that I mentioned earlier, we used a method that has been used mostly in the eastern part of the U.S. Called pasture condition scoring. And here we're rating 10 different attributes. But if you see these different indicators, 10 different indicators, there's a lot of redundancy between the indicators used for pasture condition scoring and the rangeland health. The rangeland health, there's a lot of ecology behind it, and a lot of these indicators have been worked a lot and has a very strong ecological background. So what we did was kind of talk to a lot of people who had used both of these methods and try to determine some of the redundancies and some of the areas that where we could actually merge these indicators to come up with a better solution to optimize management. So we ended up with a list of 23 different indicators. By integrating the rangeland and pastureland monitoring methods and assessment methods. And these methods provide a very strong ecological foundation and assessment and can be used to provide management interpretations and actually optimize the managements of the area that we're working in. So once you get to an area and you want to do your assessment, the best thing, easiest thing that I've found to do is you can grab a soils map, but there's also apps where you can just go to the area where you're at, press a little button, and it tells you what soil you're in, and it actually tells you what ecological site you're in, and you can actually click on that button, and then it pulls up a list of all the different indicators that are listed here for rangeland health. So a lot of that work is already done, and most of us carry a smartphone, and it's something that it's readily available through a smartphone. So a lot of this has already been done and is out there for you to use. So we rate these indicators and these attributes and come up with an overall assessment on how our land is doing. Then we look at where we're at within that state and transition model and what the potential of this area is to produce different types of and amounts of forages. And we optimize our management picking what based on where we're at and what the potential of that area is, pick different management options that would better suit our objectives. So it's objective-based, it's site-specific, and we have all this work that has already been done that can help us optimize our management. So it's a pretty neat tool. So this is an example of how this management interpretation and ecological assessment tool might work. So we go to an area. This area on the top is a natural rangeland, and we did our assessments, and it comes out that soil sizeability is pretty good after we rated all our 23 indicators. Hydrologic function is functioning pretty well. So what we have there on the x-axis is degree of departure from what we'd expect for that site. So NS, not sure if you can really read that, is none too slight departure from reference condition, and we know that reference condition from looking at that ecological site description. And then we go through that process and we look at livestock care capacity, and it's slightly departed from what we would expect to see from that area based on the potential it has. So we can look at what indicators are affecting that and determine what we'd need to do to actually improve that. So this is an example of one area where we did one of these assessments. And those are the 23 different indicators and the four attributes listed on the right. So if we look at the soil and site stability attribute, and we're trying to focus on the attributes, we see that there's none too slight departure from what we'd expect for this area based on that reference condition. And what's affecting there's a little bit of a few of those indicators in the slight to moderate departure is water flow patterns and surface resistance to erosion. So we're starting to see some erosion there, and if we don't do something in terms of management to address that erosion, we could start. So this points us to an area of concern. So right now, very slight departure. We could keep managing and keep doing what we're doing, keep monitoring, but it is an area of concern, and it's something that I would pay attention to because it could degrade even further, and no matter what you plant there, if you lose all your soil site stability, it's not going to work. Moving to hydrologic function for the area that we did this monitoring on, we see that there are some slight some indicators in the slight to moderate departure from reference. And we see that, again, soil surface to erosion is a factor there, but plant community composition relative to infiltration and runoff. So the plant community that we have there is actually not helping slow down water movement and helping retain some of that water and then safely release it back to the community, to a plant community. So there, we already know that there's something we can do in terms of management and planting a diversity of plants that are actually going to fill those inner spaces and are going to help slow water and help that water get absorbed and then, as I mentioned, safely released back to the ecosystem. And in the livestock carrying capacity indicators down there, we see that we have an issue with plant residue in this area, which is also something that we can manage for and something we can do about. In terms of biotic integrity, and this is where again, we can look at what forages and diversity of forages would work best. We see a really large departure for functional structural groups. So earlier we heard about how diversity can actually help some of these areas become more resilient. So we know from the rangeland health methods that there's an ecological potential and that there's certain plants that are adapted to grow in this area and that there's already a natural range of variability and diversity that grows here. So we can use that and those species and kind of mimic that and mimic that natural system to actually confer some resilience back to that system. So we're looking at functional groups so cool season, warm season, legumes, and the mix of these that would actually better mimic that natural environment to offer some resilience to, in this case, probably climate extremes, which as Ben mentioned earlier, is probably something that we're going to start facing more. Even though one of the things that we've noticed in the Northern Great Plains is things are getting actually a little better for us because it's warming a little and we're getting more water, so the length of our growing season is increasing. So North Dakota is great. Move up there. When we run out, when everyone else runs out of water, it's going to be a good place to be at. So in terms of livestock carrying capacity, again, we look at these indicators. We look at these attributes, and we see that we're really low on legumes. This area didn't have any legumes. In this case, the invasive plants, which Kentucky bluegrass, which we consider invasive in rangeland systems, had taken over and had actually reduced the diversity of that area. So all we have now is Kentucky bluegrass. And so we know that if we want to increase livestock carrying capacity of this area, we need to increase diversity based on this. We need some legumes in there, and we need to increase the amount of desirable forage plants. And we can do this through agronomic practices, and we've been trying to do it, but we're dealing with Kentucky bluegrass, which has been a fairly big issue. And if we think about resilience and what we're facing up in the Northern Plains with Kentucky bluegrass, it's pretty interesting because it's a good forage and it works pretty well and it does a really good job at holding the soil in place. So you'd think of it as a pretty good grass to have, but then once the your rangelands that used to be diverse and used to provide forage throughout the growing season have all been converted to this or invaded by this, during the hotter, drier part of the year, then when this grass is less palatable, your management begins to get affected because your livestock don't have something else to go to. So in terms of enterprise resilience, you need to start thinking about that diversity of forages and diversity of plants that you'd want your animals to go to during those hotter, drier parts of the year so that you're not just trying to find feed for them in summer and then again in winter when you have the tough winter conditions to deal with. So to summarize, I've described an improved assessment and monitoring protocol that allows evaluators to assess site conditions and make interpretations based on site-specific conditions, so site-specific soils, topography, climate, and how to use these specific conditions and the ratings of these assessments to come up with optimized management approaches and optimize combinations of plants diversity to
to
increase the ecological potential areas for livestock carrying capacity. And with that, I'd like to thank collaborators and people I work with us, Dr. Jeff Herrick, Sarah Gosley, and of course Max Anderson, my co-author, and the staff and scientists at the ARS station where I work at, and the NDSU Central Grasslands Experiment Station, who've done a lot of work on the forages that I presented earlier. And with that, I'll leave you with this quote that I really like, and I think about it often when I'm doing this type of work, because as a rangeland scientist and you as forage agronomist and soil scientist and all these different areas, when we go out and look at these areas, we see them with different eyes. We see the world differently. So while someone might go out and be looking at what's growing above ground, others are looking at the soils. So I think of this method as something that helps you see the world in a different way, because you're looking at the soils, you're looking at the hydrology, you're looking at the biology, and then you're looking at the management too. So I think it's relevant to what we're trying to do here in terms of looking at the bigger picture and how we can manage these areas in a resilient way. So with that, thank you, and I'll take any questions. So we haven't found a really good way that is socially acceptable yet. One of the ways that I think we could deal with it is through prescribed burning, but it's not very socially acceptable in that part of the world yet. So it's tough. It's a tough question, and it's a tough issue because, as you mentioned, it's doing really well in these ecosystems. And bringing some of the ecology, someone brought this up earlier, that in these areas that are very fertile, semi-arid systems that are fertile but had dealt with certain pressures that help the plant community be what it is there. Now that you have this extra nitrogen and all these extra things that help the Kentucky bluegrass grow, these other plants that were adapted to a system, to a tougher system, have lost the competitive ability that they had, and now they just get drowned out by the bluegrass. So ecologically, there's issues going on there, and we're trying to figure out how to do this, and it's a challenge. So it is available for the whole U.S. It's based on ecological sites, and so for every place that has an ecological site description, which the ecological site team is working on getting those for all of the U.S., it would apply. So it's something that's can be applied anywhere, and Jeff Herrick, one of my co-authors and colleagues, has been applying this in Africa, Nepal, and different parts of the world. I worked with people in Mexico and Colombia with this. So it's a tool that's applicable to many different environments. And regarding the scale of it, that second question that you asked, it is very site-specific. So you're talking about soils, climate, topography. So if you have rolling terrain, you'd have to figure out how you're going to stratify that, figure out what soils you have that, and you'd probably end up managing those toe slopes and mid slopes and top slopes different, because they're going to have different potential. Like some of those, like top slopes, might be drier than the lower slopes, so you're not going to want to plant the same species, or you're not going to manage them the same because one of them are going to be drier than the other. So it's a matter of stratifying the area that you're going to manage and doing your management according to how you stratify that. Thank you. So in many ways, so I guess it depends. But if once you do one of these assessments, so the assessment doesn't cost you anything. You can determine where it is that you need the most help at, or where it is that you're failing to meet certain objective. And maybe your objective can be easily achieved. So in the case of that soil and site stability where there's potential to start losing soil. So maybe it's a matter of how you're moving your animals through that area or where your watering points are. So in many cases, it might not be something that requires a lot of investment. It's just a change in management. Or maybe if you're looking at your functional structural groups and you notice that you're missing legumes, it doesn't mean that you have to go plow or do some really big management practice on there. It might mean that you need to find the best adapted legume that will work with the plants that you have there already and planting that legume in there. So I guess it's a way of figuring out where your problems might be and where to better invest your dollars if you do have to invest some, because you're going to see what are your major areas of concern. So maybe a landowner is concerned mostly about their forage, but after you do this assessment, you realize that no matter what you plant there, your soils have changed enough and you have an erosion problem that if you don't address, you're never going to get your end result of the forage that you want on there. So I guess it helps you determine where to invest your money in a better way to actually reach those objectives. But if it doesn't actually mean that you have to go change a bunch of things and a lot based on your management and your objectives. So it's Web Soil Survey, and you can go to soil characteristics and there's ecological site descriptions on there. But if you have a smartphone, you can just download the Web Soil, it's a soil web app, and grab your app. I can pull it up right now. Press a button, and it's going to tell you what soil. Well, here in Phoenix, it's going to tell you what soil it used to be, and then what the ecological site of that area is. And the different potential hydrology and ecology biology of that area based on that potential. So Soil Web, that's the name of the app. And then there's another one coming out that Jeff Herrick is working on called the Land Potential Knowledge System, which is also based on land potential, based on topography, soils, and it's actually more adapted to the intention for this app is to be used for crops and figuring out the crops, forages, and even rangeland too. It incorporates all of this, and it's more of a global effort, not just a U.S. effort, and it kind of does that too, but that was still in development. Thank you.